city shines like a million pieces of glass. Made some mistakes, but you just throw your head back and laugh. Cigarette smoke still on my clothes. What do you think about me now?
Hey friends, welcome to the Recovering Artist Podcast, healing and recovery in the performing arts. My name's Dean Anthony, and it's great to have you with us. You know, the gift of recovery is one that grows with giving. Unless you give it away, we won't keep it. By sharing our recovery, our healing, and most important, our struggles with others, we tend to value that recovery even more. For me, only in my first year of recovery, it's been the most powerful and humbling year of my life. I have much to learn and much to discover, but I'm willing. In the months ahead, we'll have guests from all aspects of the performing arts industry discussing addiction, depression, anxiety, PTSD, sexual assault, food disorders, discrimination, and of course, sobriety. We're not professionals here at the Recovering Artist Podcast, and we are not affiliated or connected with any 12-step organization. We will have counselors and specialists joining us from time to time, but mostly, it's a platform for the performing artist community to truly have a voice. This is the reason for this podcast. You can find us on Facebook at the Recovering Artist Podcast for upcoming guests and ways to find us on your favorite listening platform. You can also leave us a review, ask questions, make suggestions, or just reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Lastly, a word of caution. This podcast may contain mature content, difficult subject matter, and strong language. Listener discretion is advised. The Recovering Artist Podcast is on now. Welcome to episode 11 of the Recovering Artist Podcast. Can you believe it? It's already mid-May. Man, it just seems like time is flying by. It also feels a little strange, yet exciting, and even a little fearful that these new changes from the CDC and the world opening up are a little intense. I kind of feel like I'm just slowly lifting a rock and peeking my eyes out. Yet I still feel the weight of that rock. I'm still aware of the weight of it. Yeah. Not sure if I should just jump out and let it slam to the ground, or just keep holding on. Yeah. Seeking serenity, my friends. So today I titled the episode, Walking in an Addict's Shoes. I came up with this because if I think about this, and if I try to do this, I'm getting out of myself. I'm putting myself in a place to be more understanding, more compassionate, more respectful, more open. A place I just prefer to be these days. No matter what the other person is struggling with or trying to heal from, no matter what, it's just understanding. Does it always work? No. Is it worth striving for? Absolutely. Now, my guest today is baritone Mark Delavan. This guy is a powerhouse in so many ways. And he's sung in almost every major opera house in the world. Now, I often give a lot of details about the guest performers' credits and such, but today I just want to get to our chat. I mean, Mark has sung all over the United States and the world. We know that he sings the big boy rep, is what I call it. Verdi and Wagner and so much more. I mean, in 2021, you know, his engagements alone at the Met were Tosca and Aida, Hansel and Gretel Rosalka. I just encourage you to look him up and learn about his history. But today, we're just going to walk in his shoes a bit. You know, our conversation was a little all over the map in a great way, and I'm just so excited about it. And I hope you will be too. So with that, I'm just going to jump in. I want to give you Mark Delavan. What's up, my friend?
Hey, brother. It's good to see you. It's been a while.
Oh, it's incredible to see you. And thanks so much for taking the time to hang with the old man here today. And, you know, look, I'm a huge fan. I always have been. You know, I enjoyed sharing the stage with you. It wasn't a ton.
We did some good work.
But we did some stuff. And they were kind of epic. You know, epic for me. And
if my count is correct, all three of them were quite epic.
All three of them were. Yes, they were. Two of the same show and one just different. So, and my dog even barked about it. I mean, so she agrees with us out there.
I think
so. So, yeah, and, you know, we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff today. But, you know, recently, you know, I discovered that you and I have some things in common, really based on recovery and addiction and healing and what I would say all the above. So I'm grateful that you're willing to come on here and share your experience, strength, and hope, brother.
Absolutely. That's good. Yeah. Let's do it.
So it started off for me with you, and I saw a YouTube video, and you call your – what is it called? The Edge, right?
It's called The Edge.
The Edge with Mark Delevan. And, you know, we're going to talk more about that Edge thing because I think we both have that in common as well. Yep. But so walk me through, you know, that the name of this thing is Walking in the Shoes of Another Addict. Walk me through, you know, life for you so we can feel your shoes in addiction.
I guess, you know, I'm multiply addicted, and because of the anonymity rule, I probably won't state the groups that I'm a part of just for the anonymity issue. But, you know, I can remember as far back, I can remember my first beer.
Okay.
I remember my first beer. I was probably 12, and my Texas relatives brought out Lone Star beer, which is, you know, probably the alcohol content of, you know, that German near beer stuff.
Two.
You know, two of them, and I had the bed swims. And right. I went home, and we were staying in a hotel, and I remember laying in the bed going, oh, my, this is amazing sensation. Mm. I remember this first time I smoked dope and got stoned. I remember a lot of this stuff. And I remember the sensation of having no problems. I remember the sensation of going, this is pretty wonderful. I had been drinking for quite a long time. We moved into a house in like 1966, and the people who had been there before had left a little kind of fifth of Smirnoff vodka that I, as a young child, decided to drink a capful of every once in a while. And it's interesting to look back on that and realize that I never just went, you know what, I think I'm going to have a capful of Smirnoff right now. It was never that. It was always I had a bad day, and I'd slip a capful of Smirnoff.
Yeah, so you're associating it with
pain,
fear, anxiety,
stress,
all those things. Yeah,
and there was some horrible years in there for this kind of out of place young man who was bullied and was mistreated by a lot of other kids and did not handle it well.
Gotcha.
And then I had, on top of that, got some very, my dear parents who I adore and miss greatly. They've gone on to the big meeting in the sky and all of that. And I'm not going to talk ill of them, but they were religious. And so there were certain things that you just didn't do. Now, interestingly enough, I want to pause here, not pause, but I want to throw in a little story, and I want to throw out a name. I want to drop a name. It's not a droppable name, but it's a woman whose name is Janet Hume. I dated two of her four daughters. That should tell you something.
Okay.
Right. And this woman is 87 years old, and when we published one of those episodes, she called me on the phone and said, I want to know more.
Mm.
And my first thought was, no, you don't want to know more. You want to know less, I assure you.
Right.
So I told her the day. I told her bottom. I told her of one of my sexual bottoms. And that's a weird phrase to use, but you get the idea.
No, I understand.
Where the shame and the degradation of my behavior was more than I could handle. And she said the kind of religious stuff that a woman of that age is supposed to say. But she kept saying, I love you. I love you like the son that I never had. And I couldn't, and I wanted to drop her name and throw a name out here that this is a woman who told me a story fairly recently of my parents, whom I've gone through a good deal of part of my life thinking that they were these horrible people. These two people woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning on Monday morning, went to at certain people's house so that they could minister to this woman, minister. Right. They hung out and they had coffee and donuts and just hung about. And when the woman whose husband had been a bad boy and had left her and the four daughters, because that's what he decided he was supposed to do. And I thought, wow, how interesting to have this view of my parents for all these years. And then all of a sudden realized my parents, you know, did a few cool, really cool things. Anyway, going on with that.
That's a form of service, and that's a
form of
generosity and living out of self.
Generosity of time, generosity of just being a shoulder to cry on. And my question to her was, how did you deal with that period with your ex-husband? She said what we say. And, you know, people ask me, how did I get, you know, is the sobriety date that I got. I said, one day at a time and God. It's real simple. Right. It ain't rocket science. Right. Okay. And they said, and I mean it. And she meant it when she said it was God. It wasn't me. It was God. But it was also people like your parents. And I kind of went, what? What did you say there?
Right. But, you know, let me go back to, you know, you just said it's one day at a time and God. But, you know, it wasn't that easy for me to flip that switch into God.
Oh, no.
All right. So, you know, yes.
And you and I probably come from two opposite, and I've heard it all. In fact, one of my YouTube episodes coming up is about finding God.
Hmm.
You know, the question on the floor was, I went to an NA meeting, and they started talking about God, and I got really turned off.
Right.
What's up? And I said, are they serious? And I looked right into the camera and I said, yeah, as a heart attack.
Mm.
Serious as a heart attack. They don't say find God or die for nothing. Now, once again, you know, and we could go on for two days.
Well, sure. This whole conversation could be just about that topic,
right,
Mark? It could. You know, but I'm going to jump in and just say to you, you know, I come from an incredibly religious background. Yeah. Okay. I called myself a three-weeker. You know, I was there twice on Sundays and Wednesday. You know what I mean?
Wednesday prayer meeting and Monday visitation, boy. Yeah,
you know, plus there was, you know, potluck dinner on Wednesdays too. So it was eat everything in sight, which is a whole nother part of my life. Okay.
But that chicken was good, wasn't it?
You know, so I had this, I had a informed aspect of what religion was, what the whole thing was. And I'll just be simple and say I didn't buy it. I just didn't buy it. But where that's the place in those early days of my life where I learned how to be a great bullshitter. Boy, I learned it. I learned tricks how to be in a certain group of people and then go off and do what I needed to do and then come back. So, which wasn't helpful, Mark. It wasn't really helpful for my life.
It didn't enhance my relationship with the God of my understanding.
Well, exactly. But now, and I didn't flick a switch. You know, look, you know, in my sobriety date, it's you know, I'm in 17 months. But what I, you know, grasped onto pretty quickly was that power just greater than myself. Okay, you know, and that is the start. That was the start for me. And, you know, I choose to call that power God. I do everything in my power not to formulate those older days to what I'm in now. You know, I really do try to just live in the moment of expressing myself as a person who is recovering. and who is looking to make better choices across the board. So I don't know. I just got off topic, bro.
I love that. And I'm going to jump on that. I remember talking to my sponsor and belittling the two kind of denominations, the kind of sects, let's call them denominations that I was a part of, and belittling them. And he is conservative Jewish. Mm. And he said, you know, I'm really getting sick of hearing you talk about that stuff. So I'm going to assign you an inventory. You know,
nice.
The F word came to my mind at that point, what I'd like to tell him to do to himself at that point. I thought, sir, why don't you go? You're right.
Yeah.
And I thought, what a load of shit that is. But I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. And I have to tell you, the list was incredibly long. And this woman that I just mentioned was on that list of the things that I took from these two kind of schools of thought of my particular my particular religion of choice.
Right.
And I remembered how, and one of them, close four-part harmony. Great songs, wonderful songs, great music. I've run the gamut in terms of my religion, and I've heard and seen it all from soup to nuts, and some of it's crap. But there's some great stuff out there, some great groups, and some great songs and music and voices and theology. There's some great stuff out there. And I thought, you know what? I can't anymore throw the baby out with the bathwater, which is what I did. And for a long time in my early recovery, I could not go to a place of worship. Hmm. And the first time that I tried, I went to a little organization that was in the next town over in Jersey, which is, of course, is across the street. You throw a rock in New Jersey and you're in a new town.
What exit?
Exactly. There you go.
Right.
And so I went in there and I slipped in the back and I kind of found a back, and I was behind. I was toward the back, and they were now the first thing I noticed, I freely admit, and I'm not going to apologize for this, that the piano was out of tune. Now, what I would like to say to organizations now, if you're listening, tune your damn piano.
Right.
Instrument.
Okay. But I got to interrupt you for 1 second because, you know, it's interesting about this topic, and I didn't know we would just take a left
turn. I didn't know we were going here either.
And start just going down that road.
But it's us, man. It was going to happen.
But it is. But then it's okay because you were wearing shoes the day you started making those decisions. And it just brought up to me this comment I make as a director to young singers that I work with all the time. As I'm constantly saying to them, don't think, do. Don't think, do. You know, because what happens is that young singers have a tendency to process so much, you know, they stack information, as I call it. They're stacking. You know, this, that. And when it's time to do it, you're still in stack mode. So you're late. You're late. Right? You're late as an actor. You're late as a singer. You're late as everything.
Right.
So that essence of thinking ahead and processing in a gentle way is what I told myself I had to start doing. Right? So because what my whole thing would be, which my favorite thing to do, and my, you know, I had to make my own amends on this in some ways, but, you know, I would love to sit there in a group of people while I was swilling beers and somebody brings up religion. I go, oh, okay. Because I had all this history, you know, and I went to Vacation Bible School and I did all that stuff and I knew the verses and I knew the whole thing. And I, you know, and both my brothers were ordained ministers, you know, on top of that, you know, and I have great respect for them. And so, but I was taking this in such a messed up way. It was all full of defensiveness. It was full of, yeah, I'm going to win this. I'm going to win, you know, which now that I can sit back now, I would never have that conversation, you know, because it was so full of ego. And so full of self-knowledge. I think, you know, gosh, there was no humility in opening your heart to listen to somebody else. So, you know, we got off on a tangent.
A good tangent.
Did we finish? I don't know.
I don't know that we ever will.
And I'm no, We won't. We know. So, yeah. So inside of that whole thing, you started to, we were just talking about your walking in your shoes in your, you know, your forms of addiction or your forms of what caused you grief. I remember you were talking earlier about your first drink, and I vividly remember mine. Okay. It was a Little King's Cream Ale. Remember those?
Yep.
And it was warm. And it was the most disgusting thing I ever did. And I didn't like the taste of alcohol when I was a kid. I just was in that thing of, ooh, I got to fit in. I got to fit in. I got to fit in. So continue, my friend.
So I had to let's buzz ahead, because somewhere along the line there, and it may, I can firmly admit that it very well could have had to do with my religious upbringing, where I had that idea that, you know, alcohol and cigarettes and pot were probably not going to go well with my religion of choice. Now, that didn't stop me. I remember, you know, kind of what we were talking about. I remember being able to play the game and be able to be in the youth choir and the youth ensemble and the youth council, and then sneak out of the building when the pastor started his deal and go get high with the guy in the orange groves. It was just a deal. And we would cut church, and we'd walk down to other church and meet some girls and talk to, and we'd go up to, there was a Italian restaurant where we knew a girl. Wow. We just didn't have time for that. It was just, couldn't be bothered with it. And I think that's part of it, is just not being willing to, I just wasn't going to follow the rules. You tell me what I'm supposed to do, I'm going to do something else. And I remember starting to in college to become promiscuous. So in the middle of all of that, I'm sleeping around, I'm moving and shaking, I'm trying to move up the social ladder by, you know, sleeping with a bunch of people, because that seems to be what you do. And then you get into college, and you think you meet somebody and you sort of cheat on them and you sort of don't. You cheat on them, you break their heart, you realize you don't want to do that again. And then you realize, okay, the next thing to do is, you know, is to get married. I want to get married. And I married a lovely woman. But we had been physical before we got married, and she didn't like that. She didn't particularly like that. And after we got married, there's a funny thing that happens. You know, when you get married and sex becomes almost obligatory. Mm. Well, you're married now. Go have sex. Go have some children. You know, whatever. And it wasn't the same. And I realized that part of that is what the part of things that I'm addicted to is the tease, the intrigue, and the forbidden. Mm. I even remember before we got married, there was a married woman that it didn't happen, but I realized that the tease in that was pretty hot. Mm. It wasn't very long. I think we made it a year. I had an affair, and then I had another one, and then there was some dalliances, And at that age, I was young and pretty and hot, and I freely admit that I was probably producing a hormone that gives that kind of "please save me" message out into the, you know, spraying it out into the world. And there was a certain archetype of woman that was attracted to that. Mm. It eventually, after about 1992, I sat down and had a conversation with my, there was a job. It's well documented. It was in Sarasota. And, I had fallen again a couple of times, and my wife had come to visit me. She knew something was wrong. She didn't talk about it while we were there. We already had a little boy. My little boy was born. Mm. And who's now 31, by the way.
I know, it's incredible. I remember.
He's a giant.
That's incredible.
He's three, you know. Wow. In fact, we had dinner last. We had played golf. It's great. Nice. Anyway. So, you know, and I'm sitting there, and I'm trying. It was the first time That job was the first time where I ever had the inclination that it wasn't her fault. And it wasn't my parents' fault. And it wasn't, it was me. I did it. I did that. And I did that because I wanted to do it. It was, I wasn't a victim. I put myself in this situation. I will tell you how this happened because it still makes me laugh to this day. I was at a Valentine's Day party in 1992. I was all dressed up in a tuxedo. Everybody was dressed to the nines. And some guy produced a pipe, the little wooden kinds, with a bowl of weed in it.
Right.
And I thought, well, what the hell? It's been a while. What, you know, that, you know, it's good, for good time's sake, I think I'll just take a couple of loads of that bad boy. Well, I forgot. I conveniently forgot what weed does to my particular system. It turns the lower half of my body into a raging volcano that must be abated somehow. And I remember, stoned, completely stoned, praying this weird prayer to some god. I'm pretty sure it wasn't the god of my understanding now. If it was, I would have heard him laughing because this prayer was ridiculous. I you know, I was something like, God, if she is on the other side of this door, I will think it's your will. Isn't that beautiful?
Wow.
What a beautiful rationalization of a complete horseshit.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, later I look back on that going, anyway, and I turned to open the door. There she was. And that was that. And it, you know, and I remember getting back from that job, and I remember my wife and I had planned to go into counseling because things weren't going well. I know. Isn't that a shocker that things were not going well with a husband who's cheating on her? Go figure. Anyway, so she said, we were watching some video, and it was a VHS, and I remember the walk to the little rewind device, because you remember be kind and rewind. Remember that?
Okay.
I took the video out. We'd watch the movie, and I was putting it in the rewind machine that we had purchased. And she said, I know we're about to go into counseling tomorrow, but since we are, I would like to know what happened in Sarasota. I had my back turned and I dipped my head and I thought, oh no. Because I had finally come to the conclusion that it was about me. It was not about her. There was no sense in laboring and burdening her with this. I wasn't going to keep it from her unless she let me. And apparently she wouldn't let me. And I said, I want to know if this is about just getting a divorce or if this is, you're in it for the long haul. She said, I'm in it for the long haul. I only laughed because I thought most partners believe that they're in the long haul until they hear the dirty details. And then it becomes an entirely different matter. And I sat down on her couch and I told her everything. And upon hearing, and I might as well just say it the way it needs to be said, upon hearing the words, and we had sex, she had a nervous habit. And I'm going to try to describe it because we're only in audio. What she would do is she would close her eyes and kind of look up while with her eyelids and blink nervously. And she closed her eyes and she blinked a few eyelids. And when she opened her eyes, there's no other way to say this. She was dead. Whatever was left of our relationship was gone. And that was that.
Right.
I never, it took years and years to be able to see that buoyant joy. We had long since been divorced and, you know, that's weird. I won't get into that. But I never saw, as a married couple, I never saw that beautiful, buoyant joy that she used to have.
Yeah, you know, this whole conversation is triggering, you know, things in my past as well. And sure. And as I sit here, a guy who's single, and it's certainly not even remotely looking, diving into that side of this. You know, I look at my past, and I look at where those holes were, and where those needs were, and you know, and it is. I mean, look, we talk about addiction, and as you well know, can't fix them all. Yeah, at the same time, then what? I think my sponsor said to me, you know, just put them in order of what's going to kill you first.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. We can laugh about, but you kind of go, okay, that's actually makes sense. Okay. Sure. So, you know, I'm in one, and I've got a list of other ones. Yeah. But what I find fascinating is that, and I don't know, you know, I know that you're happy and you, I think, you know, all that side of where your life is now. But, you know, for me, walking away from any possibility is where I've ended up. You know, and I don't think that's the right decision either, Mark.
I don't know either.
But, you know, the beauty in that, and I think that's a big part of, you know, my downfall as I was progressing in my alcohol, was that, you know, the failures of my relationships and the choices that I made and the people that I hurt all the way across the board. And, you know, and this conversation today has gone to this really fascinating place, which I love about this podcast, because it doesn't matter.
You know us.
I knew that it's going to cover all kinds of gamuts, and you know, and we're not here to hurt. We're here to help, and we're here to, you know, be open and be honest.
Sure.
I mean, because look, we, you know, not me as much as you, but I mean, we come from an industry that is pretty. Hey, look at me. You know. Which is a topic that I had later that we would discuss about, you know, what choices in this professional opera world / performing arts world in relationships, what doors does that create and open? Holy good God. I mean, that's, you know, and that's what I discovered very quickly after, you know, losing a ton of weight from college to going to graduate school. It's like I went to a different country and went, oh, you know what I mean? And then I became Mr. Tumble Guy and got in shape and was flipping around and doing tumbles. And, oh, you know, that opened up doors. It changed my world as far as that. And honestly, Mark, I felt like I go, oh, I missed a lot of stuff back then because I, you know what I mean? So, oh, I better catch up. I better catch up.
Right.
And that's what I think I did. So, wow. Unbelievable. So, I am going to go out on a limb here. And we did talk about that, you know, inside of this scenario. And I know you're not done with where your path went on that journey, but I think it's important to get in the mix. That similarity that you agreed that I could mention of our personalities.
Right.
That, you know, Mark, I think that, you know, I was always a fan. I think that we're very similar in many different ways. And I think some people listening might be bouncing their heads. But you know, there's that, those specific words, you know, edgy, intense, you know, some could say passionate. You know, I think the biggest word that it's going to come from my point of view, I'm not going to say you can jump on this if you want, you know, defensiveness.
Yeah.
You know,
I have a theory.
Oh, I can't wait.
I have a theory on that. And it's based, I'm going to go two different ways here. I think to be a truly creative individual, and let's face it, you know, I've seen your work. You're just one of the most creative, crazy ass people that I've ever worked with. And you know, and just creating shtick and creating stuff on stage. And to be able to create the characters, especially the kind of characters that you and I do.
Right.
The kind of characters that it takes thought, it takes action, and it takes preparation. And then you get into a situation and there's somebody else that's not quite as prepared, or the director has an entirely different way they want to go. It takes an adjustment period.
Well, sure.
And to be that creative means that you have an access to places in your heart that are going to be, by definition, sensitive.
Yes, and huge thing. But inside of that, Mark, you know, and I've been tap dancing on this for 17 months, is, you know, that passion, or that, you know, that idea, and what in my head I always said, nobody can do what I can do. And there is an element of truth in that. Because it's me, it's my body, it's my thing, right. and I can do it. You can do your own version, but you can't do me. But as I've gotten sober, and I've looked back at all those choices and those things, and here's the deal. Some people bought it, Mark, and some people didn't.
Sure, and that's the way it can be.
That's the way life is. Sure. But the frustration and the disappointment and well, I was going to use another word, but I won't, you know, of people not getting it.
Right.
Was a big part of my addiction.
Sure.
It's a big part of the swimming and the snowballing and the progression, I'm going to say, of my addiction. And all of them, you know, all of my addictions and all my issues that I have. And it caused me a lot of problems. So, yeah. Am I defensive? Was I defensive? Yes, I was, you know, and here's the other thing, Mark. I mean, you're up there singing Votan, you know, I'm doing, you know, Niegush and Merry Widow on the side over here, you know, whatever. But the thing is that I wanted to be respected for the way I did Niegush and Bardolfo and Goro and all that stuff in my own way. The same way you got treated, the way you did Votan and Falstaff and all those other things. And some people did, and some people didn't. You know? And what is that adage? Stick with the winners.
Right.
You know? Right. So I don't know if I went off on the track, but I'd love to hear your thoughts about that.
Well, the other part of it is, first of all, you've got that creative side, and then you add in being an addict. And There's a couple of things that I've noticed about, and I've been in the rooms a long time, and I've observed a lot of addicts, and there's a few things, you know, that we all seem to have in common, and one of them is that kind of defensiveness. You know, how dare you treat me like one of the pack? And then the next thing you hear is your sponsor coming back and just saying, listen, get in the middle of the herd. In the middle of the herd. You're not ready to get out there yet. You're going to get taken down. Right. Oh, that's not true. Yeah, it is. And I've had conversations with guys that have had slips in any of three or four addictions that I qualify for. And they all kind of say the same thing. I got off my program. And you'll hear this one too. I got a resentment. And I gotta tell you, this period of my life right now, and that we're speaking of right now, that has been, and I'm not just singularly referring to the pandemic, I'm referring to several events, at least one of which I can't even talk about legally, because there's other people involved, have hurt so bad. I don't know how I maintain my sobriety, but one of the tools, that there's two tools that I had. And defensive? Oh my God. And one of the tools was I had to get past that and get as though there's this area of the brain that's this addict, and it's this defensive side, and it's this pissed off side that says, how dare you treat me this way, you son of a bitch. Swear to God, I'm gonna get you back somehow. No, won't say that. I know. Ding, ding. I'm not saying
All right.
All right, you know. I mean, with the person that was involved that threw me under the bus, betrayed me. I had to take some action that was going to heal me, since you talked about healing. And one of them was, it's one of those old terms that has been woefully misunderstood, and it's forgiveness. Mm. I mean, it's referred to in the fourth step in a kind of, you know, once over fashion, but I had to take specific action. I had, you know, early in the pandemic, I started running because I was getting ready for something, and I was running. And after the fact, like after it didn't seem that I was going to need that anymore, I kept running. Hmm. It was a little bit like Forrest Gump, where I, you know, started running across the country, but not quite that bad
because right.
I don't like it that much. And I would pass by this place where it all took place, and I would look over, and I would say, "I'm going to edit this a little bit. I forgive you in the name of my higher power."
Mm.
Why? Because I can't. I don't know how to forgive that.
Right, but you also had to find a way to learn how to forgive yourself.
That was a way back.
Well, exactly. But I mean, I don't think there's any way to forgive the people or to, you know, that's a whole nother thing about making amends. I mean, but being able to taking the weight off of your own problems.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing, is that if I can't forgive myself for whatever I've done, don't live in the past.
I'm going to jump on that.
Do not regret the past.
Exactly. If you are a young recovering artist and you were listening to this, let me just point out one little numerical piece of information that is very important here. What we're talking about is steps 8 and 9, the amends steps. And steps 8 and 9 are 8 and 9 because they're not 1, 2, and 3. Mm. Steps 8 and 9 come after 6 and 7, which come after 4 and 5, which come after 1, 2, and 3. And no, I'm not going to get into this. But there is an awful, if you're worrying about making your amends and you're trying to stay sober, don't worry about this. Don't worry your head about this. This is way past, it's down the line, and yes, it's going to have to happen. But these are important things that you have to do later. But right now, your job is really simple. Your job is to keep it simple and one day at a time, stay sober today and try to, you know, Try to do better today than you did yesterday.
Yeah, you know, Mark, I saw. Sorry, you know, I saw something because simple. Look, that's where I went. All right, let's just get down to, because, you know, I'm not doing the simpleton and Boris Goodenough, but I am simple, and my bottom brought me to that infancy. And you know, I think there's this really fascinating, just really simple thing talking about the steps. And you know, you can look at step 1, 2, and 3 as just simple. Giving up. Give it up. You know, 4, 5, and 6, start cleaning it up.
Ooh, good.
7, 8, and 9, makeup.
Nice.
And 10 through 12 is such the huge one, bro. It's just grow up.
Grow
up. Just grow up. You know, and again, because for me, and that's it. It comes down to, it's that simple, because I honestly feel like the day I walked into the halls, you know, the day that I broke and it wasn't, whoo-hoo, you know, ta-da, it was broken. I walked in and I was an infant. Man, I started over. I swear to you, I felt like a newborn. And there was a crap lot of pressure in that, and the anxiety and fear. I'm like, woof, you know, so it wasn't, but I gave up. So just by giving up that aspect of it, I was already starting on my way. Didn't know it, couldn't put it in perspective. But that's the thing, you know, that the powerlessness that anybody listening, you know, in whatever it is. That's all it is. It's that you are powerless to these things. And are you a bad person? Are you horrible? Are you a disgrace to society? No. You know,
you're sick.
You're sick.
Sick.
And that's okay. you know what I mean? It's go to the big book and read all these things about, you know, cancer and all these different things. And, you know, and I still, you know, I remember the first time I read through the doctor section, you know, finding out that, oh my gosh, you know, alcohol in certain bodies turns to acetone. Oh, acetone's what I took my makeup and my wigs off with. That shit is rough.
That's rough. You know,
that is some rough stuff.
That's some rough shit, man.
That's what it is. That's
not good.
Oh. Oh. Yeah. You know, so I'm sitting there in my first days of sobriety going, oh, really? Alcohol's an inflammatory? Oh, didn't know that. Okay. That's why everything hurts. That's why my body's broken. That's why I'm falling apart even more than I, you know, the 15,000 somersaults that I did catching up with me, whatever. Oh my gosh. I got off traffic, but you know, off topic. So, but I love the essence of growing up. I really do.
You know, let me jump in on that one.
Please do.
And it's going to tag the end of my previous story. And I gotta go to my first day. As I said before, it was the first time, you know, this whole thing with my ex-wife, as I said before, it was the first time I realized it was about me and not somebody else. Hmm. And I had, through hook and crook and through a process that is not that important, I discovered that there was more to it. And I had, I called a few numbers and I started going to a group. And the way I say it when I tell my story is I was working the miracle of step none. I had no sponsor and I was going to as few meetings as I could humanly go to. Now, if you're new in recovery, the tradition says 90 meetings in 90 days. And that's actually pretty conservative. I know a lot of people who've gone to a lot more. You need to be around us. You need to be around us while we can nurse you back to health, while we can call you on your crap and say, just come back to my, keep coming back. We say that all the time. And exactly. I wasn't doing that. Mm. So I was doing a series of jobs and I was basically trying to stay out of other people's beds. Mm. And I was going on this trip that was doing an opera written by a gentleman that you and I both know. And it was based on the life of a certain religious figure. Mm. And I was doing a very important figure in that religious world. Wow, I'm doing a song and dance act here. I just don't
dance.
Well, I just get trying it. To do, just trying to stay non-controversial. And there was a woman in this cast who knocked my lights out. And by the time we got back from this job, we were hopelessly in lust and we just, mm-hmm. I mean, we couldn't, it was hard to deal with. And somewhere in that process, I realized I had to do something. And it was the first time that I made the discovery. There's two parts to this. I called a guy in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. Now, friends, one of the things that your addiction does not like is the light. And it goes like this. So I pick up my phone and I dial some schmuck on the other end. It's, you know, Dean and I are talking on the phone and I call Dean and I say, Dean, I wanted to use today. Mm. I wanted to go downtown and I wanted to buy me a gram of cocaine, right. And I wanted to go out and find about a dozen prostitutes and go nuts. And what does Dean say? Does Dean say, my God, man, are you insane? No, he said, sometimes he might say, dude, I felt the same feeling about an hour ago.
Right.
Let's go to a meeting. What do you say? It's that simple, right? And I wasn't doing that. So I fell apart. And I called this guy one time and I had just seen her and I said, and I need to say this because this phrase, it makes me sick to say it because I know I said it and it is the most sickening thing I've ever said about another human being, but it talks about the disease. And I said to him, every pore of my being cries out her name. Mm. And he said, yeah, I felt that way about them all. And I got offended and I said, how dare you? You don't know how I feel.
Right.
But at that moment, when he started talking about his own experience, I could literally feel it leaving my body.
Amazing.
I could feel the disease leaving my body. Well, of course, it wasn't enough. And I remember we met for one more session, the two of us, and I thought, this recovery stuff is stupid. It's just, I'm supposed to be with this woman. Mm. And that's one of the, especially in this kind of recovery, that's the big lie.
Right.
The big lie says, you know, I can't argue with chemistry. And I want to say to you, yeah, you can. Mm. You can. You really can.
You know, that reminds me of my first job after about a month of sobriety.
Oh my God, really? So,
It was the most, you know, anxious ridden moment of my entire life. I mean, seriously, it was. I mean, I went to this job feeling completely broken. I can't do this anymore. I can't. I've talked about this on the podcast before, you know, scared to death, you know,
because it's all real.
Well,
it's all real now.
Exactly. Because you're also sitting there and your body's detoxing, which is one thing. But you're just left with this raw emotion of, oh my God, who I am as a real person is shit. Okay. I'm worthless. You know, which is, you're not.
You know, but that doesn't matter. It's about how you feel. I'm totally there with you. I'm right.
But
there.
Again, you know, I was in the program, bro. I was 90-90, bro. There's no question, you know? And, you know, I was doing it. And I told the company, I was open and honest with the company because I just wanted to be transparent, and they were incredibly kind to me, you know. And I shared this on the podcast before, so I'm not going to go through this whole thing about my first day in rehearsal. No, it was life changing.
I'm laughing because I totally identify. Yeah. I can only imagine.
You know, so I'm sitting there, you know, just anxious as hell. And what do they say? Oh, this is our director, Dean Anthony. Would you like to say anything to the cast? Burk. Oh God. Yeah, you know, what I wanted to say was, hey guys, I'm a broken mess. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I came up with this thing on the spot, which to me, months and months and months later, I believe was a God gift. No question.
I believe it.
And I'll repeat it because I don't care. If somebody just listens to this episode, they'll hear it.
Okay.
And I said, hey guys, I'm Dean. I'm excited to be here. Gone through some stuff in my life recently, and I want to come to this production in a different way. My past, I would have dumped this puzzle out on the table, pushed you all away, and I would have taken and put in all the corners in myself, handed out the rest of the pieces and say, you put that piece in here, you put that piece in here, you put that piece in here, and I'll tell you when to do it, and then we'll have a show. He said, but today, I want to dump the puzzle out on the floor, and I want everybody to grab a piece.
Let's play.
And let's all put this piece together.
I love it.
And I mean, my body went, and I immediately had this sense of, it was a great experience.
I got a question. Now, I know you're supposed to be interviewing me, but I got a question. did your addict kick in and say, stupid? What did you say that for? You can't.
No. No? It did not. Thank God it did not. It did not. I had a warmth sense of peace come over me and went.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And basically, for that next 3-hour session, things were good. Oh, yeah. And what the hell did I do after that? Freaking went to a meeting. I mean, went boom, busted across town, came back, had another good one. And I did that whole construction. And, you know, going back to what you said about calling someone.
Get on the phone.
You know, and I learned this, you know, through AA. I did. Yep. You know, the fact that I had to go to an opening night party. And it was upstairs in the bar.
Those are rough.
Man. And all I'd done was, you know, I didn't go anywhere. I mean, that was rehearsal, AA, hotel room. That's it. I mean, I was, you know, I was a recluse almost. But, you know, one of the guys that I met...
Are you sure you want to say AA?
I suppose. Yeah, AA is not. Yeah, AA is not a anonymous program. The people in it are. Okay, yeah, that's it.
Ding, so, we're back.
So getting back to this, you know, this guy, I called him because he told me to call him, and he said, look, bro, we're going to bookends. We're going to bookends. And I went, what the hell is a bookend? He goes, you're going to call me the second you have to walk into that function. You're going to do what you have to do. And then you're going to walk out and you're going to call me back. Got it? I don't care how long you stay, but you're going to call me. And I went, oh, that's kind of cool.
I got a bookend story that I want to tell you after you get done there.
No, that's it. I mean, but so what I do is I went, hey, I'm a little nervous. You know, so I walk in, you know, I go to the bar, get a club soda, and I walked away, said hello to all the people I needed to. And I said, I'm out. And I didn't feel responsible to be sitting there and talk to every single person. But what was strange, Mark, even only after a month or so of sobriety, was talking to a patron who had a big glass of wine and the smell and the wine breath coming over me. You know, I went, oh my gosh. Oh, wow. Okay. So all these little tools and things I'm learning about, not judging her at all. I'm just assessing the scenario, you know? So tell me your bookend story.
So I'm in a foreign country in a foreign city. I'm going to keep it light. And this woman who was my makeup girl was an extreme trigger. And she was kind of making plays and making it obvious that she was available for whatever reason. And I started bookending because there was four performances, and I started bookending the makeup session. And I call before makeup, after makeup, and then as I was leaving the theater.
Right.
And it was my last. And I had asked a couple of guys if they would just sit in while I was in makeup because I didn't. The temptation to do something inappropriate was overwhelming, to say something inappropriate. Do something inappropriate, look in an inappropriate place, whatever. So,
wow, but the power of that, just hearing you say that, Mark, is so amazing. Because it's not like, oh, you got to go do XYZ show and sing your guts out. That power of that thing for you superseded everything, did it not?
Everything.
Boom. Yeah.
Everything. Oof. And so, I had kind of arranged a lot of the performances. That was one guy. There was one show that was left, and there was nobody there. It was just going to be the two of us. And I thought, oh my God. And I called this guy, and he said, let's pray. And we prayed. We prayed.
All right.
And I went in there. And she reeked of cheap wine, which for some people is a real cool, but for me is nauseating. And it was something about that smell, the smell of her and being a little bit tipsy and a little bit drunk, was not, for the first time in my life, a turn on. It was a turn off. And I found myself just going, sniffing that in. Oh, that's god awful.
But the beautiful thing about that is that it's not about her shape or form.
No.
It's not a judgment on her. And, you know,
not at all.
You know what? The beauty of it is, and it was an assessment for you, for your own thoughts and your own growth.
Sure. The best part of the story is I went back to the bookend and I told this guy that story. And he goes, this is the best part. He said, that's really amazing. And I said, what? What do you say amazing? He said, I hung up the phone from you and got down on my knees and I prayed a prayer that there would be something repulsive. And I went, wow, man. And I thought, that's one of the, like you said earlier, it's one of those God things.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. Unbelievable. So my brother, we could talk for 65 hours here. I know that. And but we were talking about earlier, you brought up young people in addiction or look, old people.
New in addiction, whatever.
No, I walked in my past my mid 50s. You know what I mean? I did. And, in this pandemic period, it's been crazy for people. And you know, I was just thinking about something the other day, is that with all the CDC changes and, you know, I think it'll be in the introduction. I was talking about, you know, it feels like we're just lifting up the rock. You know what I mean? And our heads are starting to peek out, you know, but what I feel is the weight of that rock still.
Yes.
You know what I mean? The weight of that rock is still there. And the longer you'll hang out there and keep looking out, holding that rock, it's going to get heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, you know, and it's a tough time. And I know a lot of people have struggled. You know that, both you and I. And, you know, I think that's probably partially why you started doing your YouTube things. And it's why I started this podcast, was because, you know, I want people to know, in performing arts or anywhere, it doesn't matter, that there are other people in the same boat, same situation.
Sure.
And, you know, so let's talk about that. You know, pandemic time killers, as you said, or, you know,
it's great.
Or what was that one thing you just said? You know, my ass is starting to fall off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine what it's been like for people. And I live alone. It's me. It's alone. So people look at me going, how the hell did you do it? I said, well, I did it with my program, my spot. You know, the list goes on. And I can wake up today happy and joyous and free. Yeah, that's what it is. Thank God. But that's just today. I got to start over tomorrow. I mean, it's going to be, you know, I can't get complacent. I can't get, you know, I got this is not in our vocabulary. I got this.
No.
Right?
No.
But tell me what the pandemic's been like for you. And,
well, you know, it kind of started out and I made the same mistakes that a lot of people made. Well, I'll probably job A will probably go by the wayside, job B, you know, maybe not. And then they all, you know, the kind of the tumbling effect, they all started falling. And then, and I got a couple of checks. Some of the guys sent some sort of like sympathy checks that said, you know, we're sorry we had to cancel the season, but, you know, I'm sure you understand. And, you know, I got a link to a video by Stephanie Blythe, who is one of the most incredible human beings on planet Earth. And shout out to Stephanie. Stephanie, if you're listening, love you, babe.
You know, she is amazing.
She is amazing.
And I have been in touch with her several times, and, you know, I never worked with her, but she saw a world premiere that I did a couple years ago. I directed it from a former school where she went to, and she's very involved. And her generosity and kindness and
astounding
warmth about that show, but also, and so here I am, you know, I'm talking to Stephanie Blythe. You know, that's how, I'm not going to say little I felt, but that's just lucky me.
Yeah.
You know, she's astounding.
She has been wildly generous with me in situations. I mean, she and I have sung the ring cycle together. We've sung Falstaff together, and we've sung Masked Ball together. But my favorite thing was her Mistress Quickly. First of all, it's the loudest Mistress Quickly that has ever been on the planet.
Bro, I heard it.
and I'm like this close to her, and we're flirting, and she's doing her little sexy eye cocks, and she's just hilarious.
Right.
I mean, people were belly laughing at this show. It was the best Falstaff cast I can remember. We needed a new Bardolfo.
I'm just kidding.
We needed a new Bardolfo. That's We've right. already had that conversation.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
But so I looked, I got on YouTube, and I am not going to, I apologize if I get goopy about this, but it still touches something way down here. And she was doing a Facebook thing. Now, she's a ukulele player.
That's incredible.
You can't make this up. I mean, look, man, this is a guitar wall.
Nice.
I've got like seven of them under there, and she's a ukulele player, and she's good. Right.
Well, but she's consistent. She's out there, and she's out there. It's not about her ego. It's not about her ego.
She wanted to be of service. So she gets on Facebook, and she gets her phone, and she said, "Hi, friends." She always says, "Hi, friends." That big Stephanie Blythe smile. She said, "This song is a reach out to Gus Diaz, Justino Diaz. and the song is Tomorrow. Now, she sang it two octaves lower than it's written. Try to imagine Annie, you know, is it Annie?
Yeah. Annie. Yeah, that's Annie.
Try to think Annie singing in a bass register.
The sun will come out.
Exactly.
Exactly. But
beautiful, mellow, low.
Of course.
The sun will come out tomorrow. And I sat there. Yeah. It was beautiful.
I remember.
It was absolutely beautiful. And I said, I got to do something like that. So the first thing I did was I got this app called Acapella. Now, as I said earlier, one of my big things is harmony, and I love making harmony. And I don't belong to a gospel quartet, or the Manhattan Transfer did not call me when Tim Hauser died, much to my chagrin. The Gaither Vocal Band didn't call me when their baritone retired. Right. None of these people called me. I was very close on one thing, right? So I decided, well, harmonize with yourself. So they give you nine little windows and you do what you do. Mm-hmm. And at first I started out with a lot of country Western stuff. I did Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain. Right. I did a harmony version of a lot of Johnny Cash songs. And I was just putting them out there. And I started getting back these responses from people, some people that you know, because I put them on the stuff that I know, Facebook or
right.
I put them on Facebook or I put them on instant messaging and I just message them around. And one guy writes, keep them coming. They're keeping me sane. And I'm going, okay. And one day I accidentally sent it to he's either my second cousin or my first cousin, once removed. He is my first cousin's son. So whatever that is. And he says, you ought to do a YouTube channel. And I went, well, okay. What does that mean? And he said, well, I'm kind of a tech guy. I'll set it up.
Cool.
So he sets it up and I start filming. And the first thing I filmed was stuff about my career, the obvious stuff. You know, some of the questions you get asked at these functions. You know, what's your favorite role? What's your favorite, costumes? I just did one on my Wikipedia page. I posted that and stuff like that. The second one is to young singers and young entertainers. You know, like one question I put out there that's, I think I'm ready for a manager. And I looked right at the camera and said, no, you're not.
Yeah.
No, you're not. Let me tell you when you're ready for a manager. And I went through that for about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And we post them once a week and stuff. But the third one, the third segment that was posted, oddly enough, by accident, and I don't believe this, I don't believe in such an accident, was posted out of order. Posted it second instead of third. And I got so many comments from people, and this has been in the last couple of weeks, a couple of people that you know going, thank you so much for talking about this stuff.
There you go.
Nobody is talking about this stuff.
Right.
And so I think one of the things, to answer that, I've decided I needed to get some more exercise. So I would run 3 days a week and I would work out with weights 3 days a week. But I mean, if I were to put it into one sense, it would be, keep busy and keep serving,
Service.
Just throw it out there. And I go to meetings, but you and I know a Zoom meeting is not the same.
No, but it's not. But I tell you, it's what got me through.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'll tell you, I started my local Zoom meeting, and I didn't start it because I was trying to make them happy. My butt needed to be on there.
Right.
And it's still going on. And we're talking 18 months, it's noon every day. So unless I'm out doing something quick, I'm doing it. And it's crucial. But yeah, I mean, the service is what it is. And, one of the things that you and I both have in common, obviously, is I'm doing this podcast. What I'm not looking at, and what you, I don't know if you feel the same way, is that I'm not looking at the numbers of how many people are listening. I'm not checking up on that to make sure, or doing anything to go, oh, I got to pump my numbers up, because it's not about that for me. I have one person, that's it. And that sounds trite to some people, but to me, and I think to you, it's not it. when I get messages from people who have listened to an episode or something or such as this, and I get a private message or I get a text or I get something, and that's it. Okay.
I can go one more day.
Exactly. You know, and I'm not doing this for me. This isn't right. all about me. That's why there's no, that's why it's just audio, because I don't want to be, I don't want people looking at my crazy beard and my mustache. And but, oh my gosh, bro, this is, we have covered the gamut, and we could probably talk for 6 hours. But so look, I think we could cover more, and maybe you can come back again. And but before we end, you know, I do want to, you know, thank you so deeply for coming on here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having
me. So if there's any last thoughts that you have sitting here.
My first thought is always to that person who is listening to this podcast, and their thought is, this is all bullshit. I'm going to go back out there. And I, you know, let me just tell you a trick. The trick is, you know what? I'll do it tomorrow. Mm. Tomorrow. You know what? Just put it off a day, and then go use tomorrow. Because if I can just end this day, my hope is, I mean, I passed somebody on the street that I thought, I got to have that. I just got to have that. And my joke, I've got two jokes. One of them is as I pass by, I go, you know what? I'll look her up tomorrow. You know, and then by God, something happens, something like this, something where you and I get to communicate, and we get to jaw and shoot the shit and talk about recovery and talk about God and talk about stuff that usually doesn't ever go together.
Right.
Opera and God and the pandemic and
what else? Or the word healing. When the hell in my old life did I care about you healing? All I wanted to heal was my hurt knee from doing too many somersaults. You know, I didn't care about what happened to everybody else. It was all about me. So continue, my friend.
Anyway, that's to the young singer. Just hang in there one more day, you know. And if you're in trouble, hang in there one more hour. Give somebody a call. Give me and Dino a call.
Yeah, and minute by minute. You know, minute it by is. Minute.
Talk it through. Just talk it. And you know, there's always another trick you can do. And I've done this with guys 1,000 times. I'm going to use drugs just because they're kind of there. Everybody knows about drugs. So I'm talking to a guy and he's saying, I want to go. I said, all right. What do you want to use? I want to use ecstasy. Okay. Let's play this out. Okay. What are you going to do? I'm going to go downtown. Do you know who you're going to go to? Yeah. What's his name? Jim. All right, you knock on Jim's door, you lay down the money, you get the ecstasy, right? Are you with me? Yeah. Are you with me? Are we doing this? Yeah, we're doing this. All right, you get home. Are you going to go home or are you going to go party? For now, I'm going to go home. Okay, I'm going to go home. And you load it up. I mean, you drop it and you are feeling, and it is the best you have ever had. It's like your brain is, you suddenly know the answer to all the world's problems, right? You with me? Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Let's say you even hook up with somebody and you wake up and everything is wonderful. And then you come down. What then? How are you going to feel then? They stop, they pause, they say, shame. I said, yeah. What else? I'm probably going to feel a little sick. Yeah. In the past, have you thrown up on yourself? Is that going to happen this time? I don't know. All right. Well, let's say no. But let's get back to that shame thing. What does that feel like? I feel worthless. I feel like the lowest of the low. I don't want to look at myself in the mirror because I usually look like shit anyway. And I usually stop and I say, I'll tell you something. If you can find some ecstasy that's worth all that, I want you to call me. I'm going to go with you.
Right.
And it's always about, you know, in AA, they talk about thinking the drink through. Mm. You know, what then? I always pose that to God. What then? So you young recovering artists and you're out there, I want you, you know, and you're thinking about using, what then? What after all of that stuff, after the best look, after the best high you've ever had, what about then? What, how are you going to handle that? You're going to have, if, are you going to go back into the rooms or not? You're going to go back in? Yeah, I'm going to go back in. How does that feel when they say, is anybody counting days?
All right.
Yeah, I'm raising my hand. I'm Mark, and I've got one day. Hey, great, Mark. That's just great. You know what you want. You want to tell them to F themselves.
You know, that just reminds me of a guy in the program who would say this, and he said it to me once, and he goes, you know, for those who want to go out, you know, just think about packing a really solid suitcase. Because once you go, you're going to be a long trip.
Long trip.
And it's not going to be a good one.
Nope. That's good.
And chances are you're going to be hitchhiking.
Yeah.
You know, I go. There you go. So, hey, my brother, thank you so much, my friend. I really appreciate it. And I'm so happy to reconnect with you. And
absolutely.
In this way, you know, I think it's a lifelong commitment.
Amen.
And I'm there for that. So okay. I appreciate you, my brother. You be well and give my love to the family. All right.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for joining us here at the Recovering Artist Podcast. We'd love for you to keep listening down the road. A special thanks to my amazing nephew, Tyler Anthony, for our theme song, What Do You Think?, written by Tyler of the band Sirius Bright. You can find it and other Sirius Bright tunes wherever you listen to music. Thanks to my producer and friend, Matt Haas Queen, for his tireless efforts to keep me on point. I appreciate you, my brother. And to you, the listeners. Without you, it would just be the community in my head, truly talking nonstop. Don't forget to drop us a note at our Facebook page, The Recovering Artist Podcast. We'd love to hear from you. See you soon, my friends, and remember, let go of the puzzles you can't solve. Only step by step, stage by stage, can you travel the road to greater knowledge and understanding. Have a great day.
Scream out, but I don't make a sound. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think about me now? Done wrong, we're still. gone. What the hell have we done wrong? We're still here fighting your war, even when you are gone. What the hell have we done? About